If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
A lot of people hear my story about just going from volunteer to pitching 6 2/3 and think like, oh, he's just on the couch and it just happened. No, this was years of preparation, years of working my tail off, years of constantly thinking, I know I can be better.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. Today I'm talking to J.D. Schulten, who is currently throwing lights out as a starter for the Sioux City Explorers in the American Association, and is also an elected member of the 1st District of the Iowa House of Representatives. Needless to say, pretty unique episode. J.D. caught my eye a month ago when a story about a 44-year-old former professional baseball player turned politician stepping in for a pitching-strapped indie ball team and throwing 6 2/3 innings and 100 pitches. I reached out and found there was so much more to this story, and that outing built on 20-plus years of work. We dive into how he got to where he is now, which is taking the ball every 5 days for the Explorers. He had a standout college career at Morningside College, transferring as a senior to College World Series Brown, Nebraska, and then bouncing around indie ball in foreign leagues for a few years before transitioning to his post-baseball life. He eventually ran for U.S. Congress, strongly challenging incumbent Rep. Steve King in Iowa, before winning a seat as a state representative. All that time, he was still thinking about baseball, working on his craft, and how he could be better. He dives into how he balances his life in the Iowa House with his passion for baseball. Since recording, JD has thrown another great start for the Explorers, so who knows where this could go. It certainly doesn't seem like his story is going to stop at these couple outings, so really excited, really glad that he could take the time to join us. It is, trust me, I mean, there are not many 44-year-old politicians playing indie ball, so was really happy to have him on the show. Episodes of From Phenom to the Farm are now dropping every 3 weeks on Wednesdays. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast and go check out past interviews. And if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. BA just recently recapped all the prospects dealt at the deadline, still covering everything prospect. We'll have college fall ball stuff soon. A lot of good end of season recaps coming up in the minor league. So it is always a good time to be subscribed to Baseball America. And with that, let's talk to J.D. Scholten. All right, joining in for today's episode from Phenom to the Farm, he is a current right-hand pitcher for the Sioux City Explorers and elected member of the 1st District of the Iowa House of Representatives, J.D. Scholten. J.D., thank you so much for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You are our first elected official who is also still playing professional baseball. It's weird. I haven't been able to find a single other one who's doing that, so this is a real treat.
Well, I'm honored. I'm probably one of the older active players too, I would guess, but
probably yeah. probably the oldest active player we've had on the show. But I'm really excited. Typically, we start this show out by kind of running through from the get-go, upbringing, high school, you know, things like that. But I want to start with the now, because your story, I obviously saw your recent story that caught my attention. Walk me through what has you right now in a hotel in Cleburne, Texas, ready to pitch indie ball versus what you were doing a month ago.
Yeah, so July 4th weekend, right around there in Sioux City, we have a big music festival called Saturday in the Park. And I usually volunteer there. The night before, so we'll start with the Friday. I play town team baseball up in Minnesota, so I work from my start date, I work backwards. So that Friday, I got my throwing in, I got my running workout in. We actually had a parade, so with my politics stuff, I walked the parade. And then I went to the Explorers game that night and brought a couple beers, you know, just what I normally do. And things didn't go well for the exes that night, and I left the game. And one of the people, as I was walking out, jokingly said, "Oh, they need to get you a uniform," and just kind of like laughed it off. The next day, I do my post bullpen workout. I then go to the festival, but on the way there, my friend had some people over, and there I had a Miller High Life and a half, and then did my volunteer shift, and I was lifting a bunch of ice, carrying it, make sure everybody has water and ice. And that's when I looked at my phone and I saw it was at 3:15, and I saw like 10 missed calls. And Mongo, Steve Montgomery, our manager, texted me saying, "Call me ASAP." And so I called him and he's like, "Hey, our starting pitcher went down. We were desperate. We went through 10 pitchers the two nights before. Like, do you have anything in you?" And I mean, I've been begging for this moment the last few years, because I truly feel like I'm throwing the best I have in my life. And I'm just like, man, if I didn't throw a bullpen yesterday, if I didn't lift this morning, if I didn't have the beer, like, cause I usually go 48 hours sober before each start. And like, just, I take my pitching very seriously. And I told him I need 10 minutes. I got to find somebody to cover my shift and make sure everything's fine. And, I got somebody to cover my shift, got to the ballpark, signed a contract, signed a waiver for 16 pages of health history, all that jazz. And then proceeded to pitch. And we can dive into that a little bit more if you want.
Yeah, I mean, truly, truly incredible. Like, it caught my and we'll dive into it later. But you threw 100 pitches, 6 innings in that first start.
6 2/3. Yeah,
6 2. I mean, incredible. So let's start the journey to get all the way back there. A journey that started a while ago. You grew up as a son of a coach's kid.
Absolutely.
Were you always going to be a baseball player? Was there any doubt in your mind of what your thing is?
Yeah. At my grandpa's farm shop, there was a picture of me when I was just learning to walk. And somehow the local newspaper said future professional 6'6" pitcher. So, I mean,
nailed it.
Yeah, they nailed it. And so, yeah, my dad is a huge influence on my life, especially athletically. And I had a tough choice coming out of high school, trying to figure out, should I play baseball? Should I play basketball? But ultimately, when your dad's recruiting you, it's hard to say no. And so I got an opportunity to play at Morningside in Sioux City, Iowa. It was Division II at the time, but Yeah, I mean, it was a tough conference. A lot of the schools are all D1 now. You had the North Dakota States, Northern Colorado, Omaha, South Dakota State. So it was really good baseball.
Yeah, well, with this journey that starts with playing for your dad in college, is it hard to shut off the that's dad once he's your college coach? Because college coach is he rules the roost. I remember I played small college as well. My college coach, our first ever team meeting, was like, I don't want, unless something is wrong, I don't want to hear from your parents. Like, and it is with that though, your dad is your coach. But he is also the person who is concerned about your grades from like your future standpoint and things like that and your behavior and what you're doing. It's all elevated. Is it harder or easier to play for your dad?
Like both, I think. I mean, I feel bad because he had to deal with my mom. So, no, it my time at Morningside was great. I did all I could at the D2 level. He got me to a great place. And I needed to go elsewhere to kind of see what else was out there and take my game to the next level. And my time at Nebraska is something that's very near and dear to my heart as well.
You mentioned, 6'6", you're a tall guy, you're a long levers guy. We often associate it for pitchers with long levers, it is control. They got a lot of things moving. It's harder for those guys to grow under their body, especially when they're 16, 17, 18 for, I mean, I've watched clips of you pitching now at 44, and it seems pretty compact, pretty repeatable. Were you always a guy who was able to keep things in sync, or was that a longer term process as a taller guy?
Oh, that it took a long time. I was raw for a very long time. In fact, in high school, I got moved up to play varsity as a sophomore, and we had a great team. We were number two in state the entire year, and we ended up getting runner up in state. And I didn't need to pitch at all. So I don't think I got a couple innings that they brought me down to JV just to get a couple innings. My junior year, I closed, and then my senior year is when I started throwing as a starter. And again, just naturally raw, like 6'6", kind of three quarters, throws hard and the ball runs. And then like that's been my MO for a long time. When I got to even at Nebraska, like my slider was, I would say I had 1.5 pitches. It's half the time I had a slider, half the time I didn't. And that's when I really learned, if I'm going to be a successful pitcher, I got to get other stuff. And that's why, like, when I ended my career initially, the last time I played with the Explorers was 2007. Since these last 17 years have eaten at me because I knew there was more. And the pitcher that I am today is the pitcher I always thought I could be. And it's just, I'm like 85 to 87 now. I don't can't touch 92 like I used to, but at the same time, I am a more complete pitcher.
I feel that on a deeply personal level because I always look back and think when you have the hindsight and when you have like the maturity that just comes with getting in your late 20s, getting into your 30s, and kind of being able to look at it from a grand scope of situation of I should have done this differently. I should have a lot of like the mental approach of I should have attacked this certain kind of thing a little differently than I did. So I love that you have spent that you've actually put in the work to do those things that you wanted to do. As you wrap that junior season in 2001 at Morningside, we are well far away from pre-transfer portal. What was the transfer process of being a guy who's looking to jump up? How many schools were in the mix? Like, how did you land on Nebraska, which is an elite college program?
So the huge reason why I decided to transfer was, there was two reasons. Like I mentioned before, I did all I could at the D2 level and I needed another challenge. The other was that Morningside was going from Division II to NAIA. And so to their credit, like looking back, it was a very tough move, but to their credit, it was probably the right move. But I wanted to go in a different direction. And so I played summer ball in Beatrice in the Mink League, and I was working at the Nebraska camps, and they just came from their first College World Series experience. And so, like, that is something special. I mean, I grew up in Sioux City, which is just 1.5 hours north of Omaha, and went down the College World Series every single year with my dad. And so then, let's see. I remember I was talking with University of Iowa. I was talking with I think Cal State Northridge, because one of my teammates that was from out there. And then I was talking to Texas, and Texas ended up winning the national championship. They're bringing Iowa State just closed their program at that year, and so they were bringing Iowa State guys in, and so they were like, "Oh, you can kind of come in as a package." But then I heard like they're bringing like 18 pitchers, new pitchers, not just 18 pitchers, 18 new pitchers. And I was just like, and just started talking with Coach Childress at Nebraska, and a lot of we had four Nebraska guys on our team, and just got along with them. I did not grow up a Husker fan, so that was a little different. More of Iowa or Iowa State. That's my political answer. But they treated me well. I had a great experience, and got to play with Coach Bolt, who's now the head coach there. And just that 2002 season was just very special to me.
Yeah, as you come into that program, it's a pitching staff. You're a small school senior, but it's on a very talented team. A couple big leaguers, Twins legend Brian Dunsing on that team.
He was my
And
bullpen partner. And so, like, him coming in as a freshman, having better mechanics, having more pit, like, just everything was better about him. And it just drove me nuts. And I, like, just the competitiveness. I was like, man, that's what I want to be. But he's a freshman and I'm a senior.
did you feel like a senior coming in as a transfer from a smaller school? Because there's obviously a big adjustment in terms of facilities, resources, just the general level of competition. Did you still feel like, yeah, I'm an older guy on this team, I can step into a leadership role, or was it kind of in the middle?
It was in a way, yeah, like in the pitching staff there was, because they had success in the previous years getting a couple guys from smaller schools to come and join them, and so they thought, oh, you're the kind of the next in line to do that. And so as a senior, someone a little bit more mature, like our strength was that we had a lot of solid college baseball players. We didn't have the huge talent that some of these other programs had at that time, but we had Shane Comine, one of the greatest pitchers in college baseball history. And when you have that as an ace, that really shrinks the rest of the staff, and allows us to all compete for some innings. And so, it just like great guys. These are still some of my best friends to this day. And in fact, a couple of them might be coming to my game on Friday.
That's incredible. So you mentioned you had a 2.08 ERA, but opportunities were sparse. And like looking at the pitching staff, there's only so much you can garner looking at statistics over the course of a season. Obviously, you see the guys in the rotation. Like I think it looked like Dunsing started like slotted in there as a freshman and things like that, which is like as a future big leaguer, like that happens. But not a single ERA over six, which in college baseball with those bats is means you're deep. As you're going through that season, did it feel, was it a frustration thing of like, hey, when I go out there, I'm getting outs, but the opportunities have been few and far between?
I didn't. We had such an unselfish team, and I think that's the thing why I look back on it so well, is that of course I wanted more innings. Of course things could have been better, but like I still showed up to the ballpark every day and worked my tail off. Because we all were just competing with each other, and we knew that a lot of us knew there was more baseball out there for a lot of us. My roommate was Aaron Marsden, who ended up being newcomer of the year in the Big 12. And I remember vividly against Texas A&M, it was he got a start, and the whole bullpen is excited because we're like, okay, we're going to get some innings today, boys. And he goes out and pitches a complete game shutout and solidifies himself in the rotation. And so, and that really shrunk the innings as well too. But like, I'm totally happy for him. He became a third round draft pick after that. But yeah, but that's college baseball. You got to just take the advantage of the opportunities. I mean, that's all baseball. I'm still doing that, taking advantage of the opportunity when I get it and try to make the most of it.
Yeah, college baseball is especially hot hand because the season is so compressed compared to the big leagues of you kind of have 15 games to figure out who you're riding with, because especially if you're trying to get into the postseason, like you can't really afford to like test and throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks. You have to figure out, okay, this is what I think we've got, this is what I think we have to roll with, and we're rolling the dice out there. So you guys make that run as someone who spent your childhood going to Omaha. What is it like arriving on the bus as a player?
Oh, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps right now just thinking about it, even though it was 20 some years ago. I mean, it's one thing to make the College World Series, but it's another to be pretty much the hometown team. And I'll never forget like the autograph session, just like, I mean, as far as the eye can see, just signing, signing, signing. And just like the whole town was just in a buzz of Nebraska. And so the relievers are the first ones to get out to the field when we do our pregame stuff. And just I will never forget when we first did our laps to get loose and everything, just how electric the stadium was. But yeah.
Speaking of electricity in Nebraska, I have to ask, was this the Eric Crouch year that you were at school?
Yeah. So that was the fall.
The fall.
Yeah. So he ended up winning Heisman. And yeah, I mean, that was insane as well. So,
I can imagine. I've heard, so I mean, Nebraska being the official team of the state of Nebraska is get a lot of attention there when things are going well. So what is the best thing about playing? Oh, go ahead.
I will say I'm glad it's a baseball school now.
I mean,
That's fighting words for folks back home.
oh, it is tough times for the Huskers of late. What's the best thing about playing in the College World Series? Like what the player experience, everything, what it, I mean, what sums it up for you?
I'll say the biggest, I think more of like the disappointment is how fast it goes. I mean, it's a blink. It is, we were ahead both games, but end up losing both games. The whole atmosphere and just everything. I mean, I haven't gone back. I have not looked at our games. Both of them were over like 4 hour long, like just knockout, just drag out matches. And I think I would like to go back and watch them pretty soon, but it just everything was is just amazing about it, but it was such a rush that it was hard to like appreciate it. And it because you have to also think this was like I didn't get drafted right like the week before as well. And so I'm trying to also figure out like, okay, after the College World Series, where am I going to play baseball this summer? And so like there's just a lot of different emotions going into that right then. And it was just like I said, a blink of an eye. But just being out there, I love Rosenblatt Stadium. I'm an old school guy when it comes to that. And just like yeah, just so special. And it was cool to see like the other teams because you read about them in Baseball America or wherever all year long and like getting to see like Landon Powell when he was with South Carolina and getting to see Khalil Greene when he was with Clemson. That Clemson offense, I'm not gonna lie, I'm kind of grateful I didn't pitch that game because that was the best VP I've ever seen in college baseball was Clemson's VP that year.
I think that was Khalil Greene's Golden Spikes year.
Yeah.
He was incredible. So you obviously knew that you wanted, after not getting drafted, that you wanted to keep playing baseball. I mean, how did you find your way to Canada, especially when there was a team in your backyard?
Yeah. So how did that go? I think there was a tryout. So I had some family relations to Calgary and there was a tryout there and I went up there and this was the fall. I was trying to finish it up school and all that stuff. And so I just one weekend I went up there through and got signed right away. And they were trying to make it like the Canadian Football League is to football as they were trying to make it. And there was a lot of money behind it, but ultimately they just didn't get the feedback and everything like they were hoping to. So it didn't work out. At the All-Star break, the league folded. And then that's when reach out to the Explorers and they gave me a huge opportunity midway through the season and just try to take advantage of that.
What were the financials looking like for you in indie ball in the early to mid 2000s?
Well, so I was getting paid in Canadian and like they were aggressive. They were trying to get players. And because I played in the College World Series and I was at Nebraska, like that was a big thing to sign somebody like that. And so I had a decent paycheck, but like I can't remember. I think at that time, I think it was like 1200 a month, which I think is
For in
decent.
for independent
But
baseball,
yeah, back
pretty
then.
good
Yeah,
back then, yeah.
because the Frontier League was like 600 to 800 bucks a month, I think, and that was another option. But yeah, so.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly one in three American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As you adjust into pro ball and start kind of figuring out, because what is the compared to like the college atmosphere, because a lot of people say with indie ball it is more about winning than affiliated minor league baseball, which is focused on development and, you know, 20 guys are there so 5 guys can play.
Right.
What would you say, like, coming from a team that seemed, at least from what you're saying, very together, very one team, one dream as far as getting to Omaha to, you know, grinding it out in indie ball. What was just the clubhouse dynamic in terms of indie ball?
Yeah, it's tough. I hate to say it because it's going to sound a little bit negative, but it's not, because like it's huge opportunities for all of us to be here to continue to play the game. But like there is a bitterness about it because a lot of people think, oh, I should be playing affiliated ball, or I should be at this level, or I should be here. But, you know, we're all here and you just kind of make the most of it. And it is weird because like just all of minor league baseball is weird because you're competing against your teammates as much as you're competing against anybody else to try to get that one spot to move up. And so that just is a huge change from like college baseball where it's team. And not to say that we're not trying to win and everything like that, but like, yeah, indie ball, it's a grind, and like one little thing and you're gone. And there's a chance that there's no one else after that. And so that's a something mentally that is not easy to deal with.
How did the opportunity to go overseas to Belgium present itself?
So that's a crazy situation. So I finished playing with the X's in 04, and I was working at a book store in St. Paul, Minnesota, and just trying to figure out what's next. I always thought there was more in baseball, but I was just like, man, I know I'm better than this, and I didn't have a good year and all that stuff. So I ended up, it was a blizzard and nobody was coming into the bookstore. So I found this website called European Baseball Connection. It no longer exists, but on there, it matched up teams with potential players. And I saw a team in Belgium needed a pitcher. And so I emailed the email that I think it was the coach there. And 2 weeks later, I was on a flight to Belgium.
That's incredible.
And so like I'm flying
talk
over.
About like shooting a shot.
Oh my goodness. And I on my flight over there, I'm sitting next to a guy and he's like, so do you know who's picking you up? And I go, some guy named Sven. I have no idea. Like I didn't have a cell phone or like any, like this was 05, and just went out there on a whim. Ended up like leading the team, I think, in home runs, because I hit then too. And pitched him to the Europe or the Belgium Cup, which they hadn't won in a long time. And just a lot of success. And it kind of got my mind back on, okay, you're a talented player. You need to figure some things out to bring that back home.
Did, as someone who hadn't yet played in affiliated ball or didn't play affiliated ball, and you're in indie ball, it's the only level you know. Were you able to see a path or kind of carve out a path of like, okay, this is how I think I can get picked up, or this is how I think I can advance? Like, did you have a 5-year plan for yourself or something of like, this is who I think I can be in the affiliated minor leagues?
I probably should have. Like the thing, like looking back, I'm like, I did everything I could at that time that I knew. Like, if I knew the stuff I did now, and that's what I'm so jealous, like what I can do on my phone with my baseball mechanics, with what I can look up, everything is so mind blowing to me and frustrating. Cause like I pitched in the VHS era where like you try to look at your mechanics, you press pause and it's all fuzzy. And like, it's hard to improve when you're dealing with that. And like, I don't know, it just, like I look back and like I mentioned, I always knew I was better and a lot of different things like that. But at the same time, I did the best I could with what I knew, and things were disappointing for me, but I did have, I was doing everything I could, but I just, it wasn't working out.
In that time, I guess like from like college, early post-college, did you have interest in politics and like what was going, we look at politicians come from all places. There are some legacy politicians who their great, great grandparents and on were finding elected office. And then there are people who just got really loud on Facebook and decided to run. So it's a mix. Yeah. I like around when you're playing, we've got the 2004 election. We've got the Iraq war going on. Like were you dialed in at that time in your early 20s?
So you mentioned the Iraq war, and my fifth year, so I was just finishing up, and this is probably within a couple weekends of going to Canada to pitch in the tryout for the Canadian Baseball League. I went to DC to protest the potential war with Iraq. And I took a 22-hour bus ride, I think, from Lincoln to DC, got there at 8 a.m. That's where we found out where Senator Wellstone passed away. I'll never forget getting that news because he's one of my political heroes. And then that night at, I think, 6 o'clock at night, we ended up just driving back to Lincoln. Like it was that was it. We protested the whole day and got back on the bus. So, I mean, I was always an active voter growing up in Iowa. We had the caucuses, so that helped. But like, if you would have asked JD when he was first playing independent baseball if he would ever be a politician, he would have laughed in your face. Like no way. Like it's so surreal to that it's a career path of mine right now. And just one of those things.
did it ever lead to any problems in a baseball clubhouse? Because I would say that majority of teams I've been on have leaned a certain way, not typically the way I lean. Anyone who follows me on Twitter is kind of can unpack that. But has it ever caused tension? Was it ever a problem for you?
No. I remember being in the bullpen back in the day with the exes and having some conversations, but it was never heated or anything like that. And I mean, it goes hand in hand with just kind of like the joking around you do in the clubhouse as well. And so, I've never had anything like the guys don't really, it's been interesting now because like the guys will come up to me like one-on-one, they won't say it in front of the group, but they just want to ask questions.
That seems to be a thing.
Yeah.
Talking on background.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think it's awesome. Cause like good for them for wanting to learn more. Cause most folks aren't politically minded. I mean, I love talking with my teammates about politics because they're not coming from it from a preconceived notion or anything. They're actually curious, and they're what most voters are more than the people I tend to talk to who are more activists. And so, Mongo and Bobby Post rib me quite a bit, who's our manager and our pitching coach, about things. And especially these last few weeks, oh my goodness.
Like, super normal times. We're living in extremely, extremely normal.
Yeah.
We are recording this on Thursday, July 25th, just for context if anything happens after. Yes. With that, you play a few years in indie ball and you quote unquote per the baseball reference page retire. You stop racking up stats, indie ball stats, but yeah. It seems like you have kept baseball in your life in some form or fashion for 17 years. Like very few. I loved playing baseball. I love any chance I get to play catch. When I was playing, my only talent was I could throw forever. I could give you 500 pitches. None of them would be good, but I could give it to you. If someone asked me to, I'm 33. If someone asked me to go throw 6 2/3 right now, I would die. What was in the last, decade and a half, what has baseball been for you once it stopped being your primary career?
I played in Germany in 2011. I come back to Minneapolis. My law firm was on a hiring freeze. I moved out to Seattle. I played a couple years with a team called the Northwest Honkers, who made it to NBC World Series. So when I was 33,
that's an incredible name.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So when I was 33, I played for the Honkers against Santa Barbara Foresters, two-time defending champs, and we lost. But like I pitched my tail off. I want to say we lost something like 2-0, or I mean, these are like University of Texas guys. These are like these are who's who of sophomores for college baseball and summer ball. And so their coach was getting a team together with UCLA alumni to play in Cuba. And so I actually played 10 days of exhibition games in Cuba. And like that was my like. After that, I was like, you know what? I'm in my mid 30s at that point. Like, that's a great way to just kind of walk away from the game. And when you get in your mid 30s, it's hard to find somebody to play catch with, you know, just basic
extremely,
stuff.
Extremely, because everyone's hurting.
Yeah.
Everyone's sore all the time.
So then I don't play baseball whatsoever. I run for Congress in 2018. I run for Congress in 2020. COVID happens. But at the 2019 Iowa State Fair, they had a booth. If you hit above 80 miles an hour, you win a prize. And I did. I win this big old Minion. And if you Google J.D. Scholten Minion Des Moines Register, you see a picture of me walking around the state fair. And keep in mind, I met Steve Bullock, governor of Montana that day with this thing. I think President Biden was there later that day. I didn't get to see him, but like all these political, because I mean, this is during the caucus and all that stuff happening. And so then fast forward to COVID happens, world shuts down. A month in, I'm probably have a few too many whiskeys on a Saturday night. And I went down a rabbit hole on YouTube of pitching mechanics. That's the nerd I am. And I was just so like, oh my gosh, if I would have done this, if I can like use my legs more, this, that, all that stuff. Immediately the next day, I buy a couple dozen balls in a net and I just start throwing. And boy, I was sore the first at first. But the goal was, okay, when I hit the state fair that year, my goal is to hit 87. And the state fair didn't happen because of COVID, but I found a baseball academy, 60 pitches it took, but ended up getting 87 and just super excited. End up losing that election. I want to spend more time with my family. They all moved up to Minnesota. Again, Minnesota has amazing town team baseball. There's not a state that I know of that can compare to Minnesota when it comes to town team baseball. And so I called up my old team, Lions Pub, and said, hey, I don't know what I got. I haven't played in 7 years, but I'll give my best. And I went 10-1 with like a 1.5 ERA. And then next year did the same thing, pitched pretty well. I end up winning my election for the state house after running for U.S. Congress. I ran for state house, won that. And then I asked them, I was like, well, that first, we're January to April, May. Do I have any obligations that summer? And they said, no. I go, so I could play baseball somewhere. And that's when I started, and they said, yes. And I said, okay, that's when I started reaching back out to European teams. And I've always wanted to play in the Netherlands because it's the best league in Europe and my heritage is Dutch. And so I thought it'd be a good opportunity. It didn't work out. So I'm playing with my summer town team. And then all of a sudden I get a message saying, hey, we're having a visa issue with our Japanese pitcher. We have a couple of injuries. Can you come over to help us the last couple months of the season to help us make it to the playoffs? And so last year I got to do that. And I learned so much about me personally as a pitcher from that experience. I don't think I really pitched that well. My stats are just okay. I got them to the point where they needed, and the team was super happy with me and everything. But like, I personally, I was like, okay, there's more there. And so this year, just by coincidence, I helped out my cousin's kid at a baseball academy that was just 24-hour access. All you needed was to punch in the thing, and it was just batting cages, and they had mounds. And so during the legislative session this year, I pitched bullpens at 10 p.m. I pitched them at 6 a.m., whatever I could fit it into my schedule. And that just allowed me that much time on the mound, allowed me to get work on mechanics, work on my cutter, work on a more consistent changeup and things like that. And so, so that's like all of this, like a lot of people hear my story about just going from volunteer to pitching 6 2/3 and think like, oh, he's just on the couch and it just happened. No, this was years of preparation, years of working my tail off and having a strict regimen between each start. Years of constantly thinking, I know I can be better. Like I know my slider can be more consistent. I know I can get a little bit more movement on my changeup, and I know that this or that. And so that's kind of how I'm here right now.
With that, we like to think of our politicians as people who shouldn't be allowed to have outside interests. How does your baseball fall into your time as a representative or your duties there? Do you get ribbed for it on the House floor? Has it been used as an attack against you? You are running for re-election right now. Like,
right.
How does this other life that you're living, or this thing that you love that you're putting time and effort into, how is that folded into this other thing that I would imagine you need to have quite a bit of passion if you are willing to put yourself through multiple elections?
Yeah. And so, I mean, I feel I have a great sense of being able to walk and chew gum at the same time. So like, I'm very passionate about
it's a rarity
many,
now.
Right. I'm passionate about a lot of different things. And so like, it's one of those things where like, I think when I went to Europe, there was people who just disagree with my politics. They didn't like it. And just, it also stems back to, when I worked at that bookstore before I went to Belgium, I came up with a theory there. And I think it holds true in a lot of different things, definitely in politics. But if you gave every book away for free, someone will complain about the bag it comes in. So there's always going to be haters, you know, even in baseball. Like we're on the road. The fans tomorrow are not going to be the biggest J.D. Scholten fans. I get that. So for me, like it's different because there isn't anybody in the nation that's like this right now. So I think people are kind of curious about it in a sense, but at the end of the day, like I can fulfill both my duties. And if I thought that they were hugely conflicted, I wouldn't do it.
You say you're the only person in the nation right now. We don't know that Chuck Grassley, 90 plus years old, is throwing bullpens at his spare. Like he could just be waiting for the call. You might have just gotten the call that was meant for dusty old Chuck Grassley.
I will say the congressional baseball team has reached out again and asking if I'm interested in running for higher office.
Yeah, I mean you'd be a huge asset in that game.
Yeah,
I mean you'd be a game changer.
Yeah, well, and here's the other thing: it's like I don't view myself as a politician. There's a lot of politicians who, when they were born, were like, "I'm going to be this," or "I'm going to be president," "I'm going to be governor," all that stuff. I just really didn't like the person I was running against when I ran for Congress, and that was one of the main reasons I decided to run. I don't have like the ambition to run for federal office. If it happens, it happens. But like, if I just am like, I'm very happy in my state house seat. I love representing Sioux City. I love what I get to do. And I'm content with that. I just, if that's the only seat I'll ever be in the rest of my life, so be it. I'm okay with it.
The one political thing that is on your website that I think is appropriate to discuss here is ending blackouts.
Yes.
Iowa is a cursed state in terms of how MLB operate. Like I feel so. I live in San Antonio, and both the Astros and Rangers are blacked out here, despite being a respective 4 and 5 hour drive away. But Iowa is a whole different beast in terms of blackouts. What is, as a baseball fan in Iowa, one, how frustrating is that? And two, what is the path?
Yeah. So I've had two different bills. And I'm trying to get somebody. So right now, Republicans control the House and the Senate and the governorship in Iowa. So in order to get anything passed, you need Republican support. So I've been trying to connect with Republicans on this issue because I feel it's Major League Baseball bullying the state of Iowa. And so my first bill that I did was not as strong as the second bill. But basically, in the state of Iowa, we're banned from 6 different markets: the Twins, the Brewers, the White Sox, the Cubs, St. Louis, and the Royals. And if they're all playing other teams, that's 40% of Major League Baseball on any given night that we are not allowed to watch, even though we buy the subscription. And so Major League Baseball flew in people from their commissioner's office to talk to me about this. And they said they're working on it. And I think we both, I trust them. They are. Or believe that they are trying to improve on this. But at the end of the day, like we're a year later, now almost a year and a half later, and nothing has changed or nothing has improved. If anything, it's gotten worse because my folks who live in Minnesota now, they can't watch Twins after that sale happened earlier this year. So at the end of the day, if I feel that their network is, or these regional networks are archaic. Like they're not for the streaming service. Like we are in the streaming age. And so the fact that in the state of Iowa, it doesn't matter what part you in, if you're in it, then you're blacked out of these 6 different markets. So that's where I think we do have jurisdiction over deciding what happens in the state of Iowa. So hopefully I want Major League Baseball to correct it on their own, you know, but like, I want to raise this awareness because like, the game of baseball has been so wonderful to me. I want to make sure we pass it on to the next generation of fans. And we're not doing that if we're not meeting the moment with what's happening with streaming.
Yeah. I mean, as I am a Twins fan, and the only time I cannot watch the Twins is when they are playing in my home state, which is, which seems so backwards.
Well, they can't watch it in Minnesota right now. That's
also very backwards. Yeah. Foolish decision after foolish decision. But with that coming, we've gotten all the way back to the present. You do your spur of the moment spot start, Then you get another. Then you get another. You are still in uniform at 44. You are 17.4 years older than the league average age in the Indy Bowl. How many like old guy jokes have you gotten in the dugout so far?
You know, the guys have been great. They really hasn't. But the game that I like to play was, were you born before or after I graduated high school? That's nice. Yeah. And I mean, it's pretty 50-50 on our team. So the next closest guy to me, we have a 36-year-old who has big league time. But yeah, we just picked up a kid from college. My catcher, all three outings, is literally half my age. He's 22.
And so with that, you have said you have put in all this work on your mechanics and sharpening. You don't have the velo you used to have, but it seems like you've got a better grasp of your mechanics, your repertoire, what you can do on the mound. Are you seeing this as you're going to like riding this out? Like you're back in Indy ball. Like,
yeah.
Are you planning on, you know, help, knock on wood, any health, whatever, are you planning on, like, I'm going to be in camp next year?
I am kind of taking it a game at a time. So the first game was obviously like, we need somebody. And it was weird, 'cause like that game, I mean, they just had, again, used 10 pitchers in the two previous games. The starting pitchers out, the morale was not good when we started that game. And they're like, oh, God bless you. You know, like 44-year-old, like, yeah, what's he going to bring? And then there was like a transition, and we got the lead in the second inning. And then we hit a couple of dingers and expanded on that lead. And then all of a sudden it was got to about the fifth inning. And that's when guys were like, hey, what are you doing in 5 days? And then go up to Fargo. And that's like the Fargo one was where I really like knew like, okay, I can compete at this league. I didn't know if my stuff could play in this league anymore, but that's after the Fargo game. That's when I was like, okay, was a 3-1 win up there. And then we got the 3-2 win against our big rival and division leader Sioux Falls last week. And so, you know, any day I can get on the mound and compete is a great day in my mind. I would love to play as long as I can. I have no idea what the future holds. I didn't think I would get to this point. So it's all just gravy from here on out.
Well, I'm going to be rooting for every start for you from here on out. I have a quick rapid fire for you, then I'll let you
know. Yeah. All right.
Favorite indie ball stadium.
Ooh. I mean, Lewis and Clark Park. I have to go with our home park. I'm sorry, that's a crappy answer. But I played high school, college, and pro there. I have to go with it.
Best hitter you ever faced?
Ooh. Ian Kisler in college.
That is a – at Arizona State?
Missouri.
Missouri. Oh, yeah. Did he transfer, or am I just completely wrong?
No.
He only played at Missouri.
He transferred, I believe.
Favorite Sioux Falls food spot?
Sioux Falls or Sioux City?
Sioux City.
Yeah. So there is a La Juanitas. You got to go with La Juanitas. We have great Mexican food in Sioux City.
What is the go-to food at the Iowa State Fair?
Oh, I'm a corn dog guy. Like,
love that corn dog.
Yeah.
Last question. Everyone gets this. Do you have a nightmare bus ride story from your time in pro baseball?
Oh, actually, the worst bus ride. I mean, I told every. I guess the worst bus ride I experienced was actually in high school. When I was a sophomore, we were playing down in Des Moines, 3 hours away, and our bus broke down. And all the seniors, we were very senior dominated at that time, and seniors were already out of school, so they didn't really care. But a bunch of us had to go to school the next day. I don't think we got home until like 1 or 2 in the morning because the bus broke down. But I also said in every job interview, best job I've ever had and worst job I ever had was minor league baseball. And the best job, it's when things are going well. There's not a better high in this world. But when you're riding 10 hours, you can barely lift your arm above your shoulder and you got to pitch that night, it gets a little rough.
Well, JD, I'm glad that you're back in the saddle. You're back on the mound. I'm going to be rooting for you. That's all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. And that's it for today's episode from Phenom to the Farm. Huge thanks to JD Shulton for stopping by, walking us through his journey, and wishing him the best of luck on the rest of the season with the Sioux City Explorers. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'll catch you back in a few weeks. Thanks for listening.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.